Let's speak to Geoffrey Donaldson from the DUP. Geoffrey, Sir Geoffrey, thank you for coming on. Do you interpret that as a unionist veto, those two words, for approval?
Well, good morning, Stephen. And first of all, since it's my first opportunity, can I extend to you and all your colleagues at BBC Northern Ireland our sincere sympathy on the loss of your colleague and your friend, Stephen Clements. And
thank you for doing that, Sir Geoffrey. Thank you.
Your colleagues and with Stephen's family at this time.
Thank you.
Yes, I think it is evident from what is proposed that it's important there is agreement at Stormont on what happens with issues that are sensitive, like the Irish language, and that's why it is proposed that any standards that are to be set for the use of Irish language have to be agreed by the First Minister. And that does mean that the DUP will have a very important and crucial say in how those standards are drawn up and what they will be.
But for approval means a unionist veto, Sir Geoffrey, doesn't it?
Well, that's the way that Stormont operates, Stephen. It operates on the basis that there has to be cross-community consent for these things, and that means, of course, unionists have to consent. And as you know, we have said consistently the consent principle is vital to the effective functioning of our political institutions, and so unionist consent will be required.
So how can Sinn Féin, they've been consistent over the last 3 years that this is not something, the Irish language rights are not something that they should have to negotiate. They are a right, they're not up for negotiation. How do you expect Sinn Féin to sign up to asking for your permission for what they see as their born rights in Northern Ireland?
Well, Stephen, Sinn Féin will have to come to their own decision on this, just as the DUP will come to its decision on this. Sinn Féin, for a long time, have advocated a rights-based approach. I think they raised expectations. I listened to people coming on to your programme talking about all manner of things in relation to the Irish language, which I felt were unrealistic. For us, the key test is this, Stephen. Given that, you know, we're talking about somewhere in the region of 6,000 people, according to the last census, who speak Irish fluently in Northern Ireland. We're talking about a small number of people, but nevertheless, they are entitled to be heard. And what is proposed is to facilitate people if they want to communicate in Irish, but not
but with DUP permission, not without DUP, but not without your permission. That's what you're asking Sinn Féin to sign up to.
Well, Stephen, there will have to be agreement on how this works out in practice. That's the essence of government at the end of the day. You take collective responsibility. That's how government is supposed to function. And yes, the DUP will have a major say in how this works out going forward. We will try to be respectful to people and recognise that people who speak Irish and want to communicate in Irish can be facilitated, but we are very clear, Stephen, we will not agree to standards that impose Irish on people who don't speak it.
So,
and whether that's road signs, whether that is Irish language in schools or having to speak Irish to get a job, no one will be required to speak Irish to get a job. There will be no compulsory Irish language in schools, and there will be no Irish language road signs because the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland speak English, and that will continue to be the main language.
But part, Sir Geoffrey, of what Sinn Féin have been holding out for many years now is for the Irish language to be enshrined in legislation so that it is protected by legislation. What is the point of any of that legislation if ultimately the legislation returns power to the DUP to stop Sinn Féin doing anything they want through an Irish language commissioner? They need your permission. It doesn't matter what the law says. The law will actually say it needs OFM, DFM permission.
And that's the way it should be, Stephen, in a shared society. We have to be respectful of each other. But what we do and the measures we take have to be proportionate. And as I pointed out, we are talking about a small minority of people who speak Irish as their first language in Northern Ireland. There are far more people who speak Polish as their first language in Northern Ireland. And that's the reality we're dealing with, Stephen. And look, the priorities for the people that I represent, frankly, our health, education, infrastructure, policing. These are the priorities. They want their politicians back in Stormont taking decisions and allocating adequate funding to tackle waiting lists, to ensure our schools have proper funding, to ensure that we're investing in our infrastructure. These are the priorities, Stephen, that people spoke to me about on the doorsteps when I was out and about, and that's why they want to see Stormont back up and running.
Well, let's talk about funding, because I was driving into work. I'm actually presenting from Los Angeles this morning. I'm on holiday, coming off my holiday to do this today. I was driving into work and I thought, is this the same DUP, these skillful negotiators that usually look at the very fine detail of an agreement before they agree anything on behalf of their constituents in Northern Ireland? Is this the DUP that haven't a clue how much money the British government is actually committing to Northern Ireland, and yet you have already committed to go back into the executive? So you've had no financial commitment. Arlene Foster on Good Morning Ulster this morning confirmed that she did not know how much money the British government had committed. Julian Smith then said on the same programme that he wasn't prepared to reveal how much money they're committing to Northern Ireland. And this is the same party, the Conservative Party, that in your words, your party's words, turned you over the so-called border down the Irish Sea. Why are you trusting them?
Well, Stephen, we're not trusting anyone in this. We're trusting ourselves. And we're not going back to Stormont. Let's be clear about this. We're not going back to Stormont because of money offered to us by the government. You said at the beginning of your programme, you talked about blackmail. We will go back to Stormont because it's the right thing to do for the people of Northern Ireland. And we will do it on the basis of our assessment of what is on the table here. Is it fair and balanced? Does it ensure that our Ulster British heritage and culture is protected? Yes, it does. Does it make provision for those who served our country in the armed forces through the establishment of a Veterans Commissioner for Northern Ireland, through the full implementation of the military covenant in Northern Ireland? Yes, it does. Does it deliver a border poll on a united Ireland? No, it doesn't. These are the things that we will look at, Stephen,
Sir Geoffrey, to reduce waiting lists, for example, it has been assessed that Northern Ireland needs somewhere between £700 million and £1 billion. That's just for waiting lists in Northern Ireland alone. And John Campbell, our business and economics editor, was saying this morning, like, we're talking about billions here if you add up all the commitments in that draft deal. If I ask you this morning, has the DUP actually got a firm confirmation from the British government as to the quantum, the amount of money on the table? You and I both know the answer is no.
Well, Stephen, we will, of course, a new executive, when it's formed, will have to negotiate with the government what the budget is. That's the way that government works.
Your leverage is you don't go back in until you get a commitment.
Well, and the first thing we did last night, Stephen, was go and see the Secretary of State, and we said to him very clearly, we need to know what you're putting on the table in terms of additional funding for healthcare and additional funding for education and infrastructure. So we're continuing in that discussion with the government, and we will press them on those issues, Stephen.
The same government that you claim turned you over with the so-called border down the Irish Sea. How much money have they committed?
And as I've said, Stephen, in the end, we will work with the other parties to secure the funding that we need to deliver a more effective health service in Northern Ireland to ensure.
And what if they don't give it to you? What if they don't give it? What if they don't give it to you?
A commitment in this proposal for 900 new nurses. Now that has to be funded, Stephen, and so the money has to follow to ensure that that commitment is delivered. There's a commitment to 600 additional police officers, much needed on our streets in Northern Ireland.
There's no financial commitment associated with it. Julian Smith is refusing. If he is so honourable and determined to deliver on his promises, in the same way that he has said that you and the other political parties in Northern Ireland have been talking non-stop and have been talking enough, it's time for a decision, why is the British government not put a figure on this? Why have they not committed to an amount of money, and why are you not asking for it?
You can ask him that question.
But have you not,
we have made
on behalf of your constituents?
That we need to get the figures from the government on the budget. It is in the government's interest to make this work. If there isn't the resources to enable us to transform our health service and to help our schools with their budgets, then it won't work, Stephen. So the government is going to need to step up to the mark when it comes to funding these things.
But why have you gone in rather than getting that commitment and then going in?
Well,
For example, here's a question, Geoffrey. How much money has been committed to the NHS in Northern Ireland as we speak? A figure. How much?
Well, we reckon, Stephen, that we need £750 million to tackle the waiting list crisis.
And how much has the British government committed?
Well, that's the figure that we will need, and that's the figure we need the Secretary of State to commit to.
And has he committed to that?
Well, those discussions are ongoing with the government, and we haven't yet formed an executive, so we still have the leverage.
But you've agreed to go back in. There's no leverage, because you've agreed.
It's not just a question for the DUP, it's a question for all of the parties. In fairness, it is one thing that the parties are united on and have said to the government there must be sufficient funding to ensure that the executive can deliver on its priorities.
But some of those other political parties are holding out.
In these proposals, and they will have to be properly funded. That's the bottom line.
But or what? Will you walk back out again?
Devolution won't work if the funding isn't there to deliver the priorities, Stephen. That's clear. And the government has said they're committed to making devolution work. They're committed to delivering on the priorities that have been outlined in their paper. So, have to step up to the mark on this and deliver that funding.
I know I only have another couple of minutes with you, and I'm grateful for your time in a morning like this. You know, I look at page 52 of the draft legislation. Again, the DUP, a party which in the past has drilled into single words when negotiating. And in this draft legislation, when it talks about infrastructure, it talks about a commitment, now, and these are the exact words, to invest in a range of potential capital projects. Potential capital projects? Potential? There's nothing nailed down. There are no amounts of money committed to Northern Ireland, and now I read about potential capital projects.
That's because, Stephen, the executive has to meet and agree to prioritise the capital projects for which the funding will be needed. I mean, we have to deliver a programme for government. There are proposals for that to happen very quickly, but it needs to be agreed between the parties who form the executive. Now, we don't know at the moment how many parties will be in the executive, and until we do, and those parties sit around the table, they cannot agree the priorities for the capital funding.
And you also don't know how much money you're going to get.
One example, Stephen, and that's the York Street interchange, which is a infrastructure project we've been pushing for a long time. It would help to considerably impact on the congestion on the West Link in Belfast, the congestion at the M2, M3 interchange there. And that is a priority for us. So I believe that that will be one of the infrastructure projects that will be invested in going forward.
The Irish government have committed, for example, and this is an example, £75 million for the A5 up to 2022. So there are hard numbers in there from the Irish government, and there are no hard numbers in there from the British government.
I think that the best way that we can get those hard numbers is for the parties to stand united and to press the government to honour the commitments, to provide the funding that backs up what they're proposing in this paper, Stephen.
And do you trust them, Geoffrey?
These are the things that need to happen, and they're not providing the funding to deliver those things, because clearly devolution won't work if that happens.
Okay. And those capital projects I've just spoken about, how much funding will you have? So that as an executive you can make the decisions as to which to prioritise. So how much funding will you have?
Well, Stephen, we will need to sit down and quantify what those projects are before I can give you that figure. That has to be agreed by the parties around the executive table.
You have to get the money first.
On its own, Stephen can't deliver that.
But you have to get the commitment to the money first.
The executive table.
I would put this charge to you, Sir Geoffrey, that there might be some people listening to this knowing how good of negotiators you are as a political party and concluding that you're so desperately frightened of an election that you're walking in here to a deal, unusually walking into a deal, where you haven't nailed the detail.
Well, Stephen, I've just fought an election, so let's be clear, we're not frightened of going before the people. That is not the case. But what the people said to me on the doorsteps, Stephen, was not that they wanted another election, but that they wanted Stormont back up and running. That was the clear message that I got on the doorsteps. A door after door after door in my constituency, that it was clear that was the priority for the people I represent. Now, that's what we're in the business of doing, but it has to be a fair and balanced deal. And yes, we do have to secure the funding that is necessary to deliver the priorities for the people of North Ireland, including healthcare, in education, in infrastructure investment, in policing and justice, and in many other areas. What this paper does is outline, and that's all it does. If you read the details, Stephen, if you read what it says, it's only an outline of what those priorities might be, because they have to be agreed by the parties in the executive. Once we get those agreed, then the government needs to step up and honour its commitment to fund those priorities.
The same government led by a Prime Minister who flew over to your party conference, promised you there would be no so-called border down in Irish Sea, then, in your party's words, did that, turned your party over, in your party's words, and now you're trusting him again. And that's in terms of the our future education of our kids and the waiting lists in Northern Ireland that are catastrophic. That's the man in the government you're trusting. You're not nailing it in a deal. You're not nailing it down in anything binding. You're trusting him.
We're not working in a vacuum. For example, we do know that there is an additional £500 million coming to Northern Ireland for education as a result of the announcement the government made at Westminster. We know that, what we need in terms of tackling waiting lists. And so we know what the broad outline of those figures are, but what we have to do is get agreement around the executive table and then secure the funding from the government. Okay. I'm not trusting anyone here, Stephen, on this. What I'm doing is trusting the people of Northern Ireland and recognising what their needs are and prioritising those needs. And we will go and argue, as we did before. We secured £1.5 billion for public services in Northern Ireland as one party. I think we can do better as a united group of parties going to the government and presenting to them what are our needs. Exactly what we intend to do, Stephen.
I'm going to let you go in 30 seconds, just very briefly. When Julian Smith on Good Morning Ulster this morning told the people of Northern Ireland, some of them will be sitting on waiting lists, no deal, no money, do you consider that appropriate?
Well, I think it's unfortunate, Stephen, because playing on people's emotions is not the way to deal with this. But what is the way to deal with it is to get our government back up and running on the basis of a fair and balanced settlement. And that the parties sit down around that table and agree what we need and then go to the government and secure the funding that is required. I could give you, Stephen, a quick fix, big figure this morning. But, you know, I can't speak for the other parties. A power-sharing executive means collective responsibility. It means the other parties have to have their say in all of this as well. This is not just down to the DUP.
You can't agree anything until you know how much money you've got. You can't do it.
But we recognise and we understand what are the priorities for people in Northern Ireland. It's about delivering a more effective healthcare system so that we tackle the waiting list. It's about ensuring that our school budgets are adequate to educate our children. It's about putting more police officers on the streets. It's about investing in our infrastructure. We know what the priorities are, Stephen. What we need to do now is sit around the table as a government for the first time in 3 years and agree those priorities, agree the funding that is required, and go to the government collectively and secure that funding for the people of Northern Ireland. And if the government don't divvy up, if the government don't honour their commitments, then devolution won't work, Stephen. And it's in their interest to make it work.